into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
So everybody in the room, put your hands up if you have won a quadruple treble. If you're listening to this podcast or if you're watching, you will see that we have all had both our hands up because Celtic have won the quadruple treble. Juco James and Alan Morrison, what a happy day we are here to celebrate an historic victory, really. It was horrible to watch. It was ugly. And the stats probably don't reflect how happy it made us. But ultimately, a quadruple treble has never been done and it probably will never be done again. How are you?
I'm very well. How about you, Alan? How are you doing? You look, you got a shit-eating grin on you.
Yeah. Celtic da here, obviously. Yeah, listen, I, it's funny. I mean, you're absolutely right. I don't think I've ever felt as conflicted about something in my life. I was literally, as the game went on, I was slumping further and further and further into my chair, and it wasn't the rather nice IPA I was supping. It was just, I just couldn't believe what was unfolding before my eyes. And then you sort of win, you sort of think, that's great. And it is an amazing achievement, but oh my God.
Well, so it's 2020. So I always try to say this year anyway, that things could have been worse. So the great thing is we were really only technically behind in the game for about what, 90 seconds, maybe, after Christie missed his penalty. But other than that, I mean, yeah, as horrible as the game was, I mean, we were never actually behind, which is the one positive. Yeah. I mean, we had this pending doom feel after the first goal in the second half, but, you know, fortunately, we were never actually trailing.
Well, I had the impending doom feeling since Neil Lennon said that he was going to pick the players that got him to the final, and that's exactly what he did. He went for Scott Brown, and I mean, we spoke about this on the Celtic State of Mind charity event that selecting Brown was not the thing that you want to do, but he went for it anyway. And Scott Brown played 106 minutes of the game, not bad for a 35-year-old, but not good for Celtic Hearts, because really and truly, I said a couple of times coming into that game that in finals, the performance doesn't really matter, because when you win, then you don't have to worry about that being an overlying performance again, because it's a once-off game and it's a special occasion and the opponents play to a better standard. But my God, that second half was probably one of the worst performances Celtic have put in this season.
And I think you're spot on. In normal times, I would say, if you perform like that in a cup final and win, who cares? And I think we probably all felt like that in the League Cup final. It just went against the Rangers. But for me, it's actually all of the things that have been apparently weak for Celtic this season were, again, on full display. So, you know, it's just almost like, you know, we've learned nothing, we're not improving, the performances are pretty much the same as they were. We've won a trophy, of course, it's fantastic, but it wasn't like a one-off, oh, it's a cup final, Hearts have suddenly raised themselves. All the frailties were on show, and it's not all Scott Brown's fault. I mean, these were systemic frailties. Brown was probably one of Celtic's better players, to be fair to him. But, you know, the defensive frailties, the lack of structure, the lack of changing things when momentum is clearly shifted to the opposition, all of those weaknesses were still apparent.
Yeah, this is the Huddle Breakdown, by the way, the podcast that looks at the stats in XG. I got a little bit overexcited there at the start. I forgot to introduce who we actually are. We're the podcast that look at the stats in XG. We try to keep emotion out of it. I failed badly there. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do at Huddle Breakdown, or you can subscribe to us on Spotify, Spreaker, iTunes, and we're on YouTube as well under my YouTube channel. All the links are when we post the podcast on the Twitter account. So the best place to get us is the Twitter account these days. James, looking at this game, what were your overriding thoughts before we actually get into the numbers? Bad performance, obviously, but any positives?
Yeah, so the positives is that, I take away one main positive, Well, two, really. So the first half was a matter of degree. So, you know, I my routine in games is I usually check in on, I stay off everything during the game for the most part, until I get, unless I get really distraught. Then I might peek into the Twitter, but and I'll check in at halftime, and you know, jump into the mob at after full time. And when I checked in at halftime, and I saw the level of just euphoria of the performance of the first half, I felt like I had watched a different game. I mean, I thought we played reasonably well. We had a decent level of control of the first half, but you know, my intuition, my sense, and I, you know, again, I'm like everyone else watching the game. I mean, you get emotional and jumping around, and I usually don't even sit down during games. So, my instinct, my sense was, you know, we controlled the first half, but it was no great performance. It wasn't a dominant performance. And if you look at the two goals, it was basically two fortunate bounces that created. I mean, Christie's shot was incredible. That's the upside of him taking those shots, is that once in a while they go in like they did in the semifinal as well. And then obviously the header that created the handball and the penalty was also fortunate. And that came from a good sequence of play that drove the corner. But so, you know, from an XG perspective, it was a nothing first half from open play, really. I mean, I think we had around half of 0.5 around there, plus or minus, and Hearts really had three attempts. But the thing was, I mean, it could have very easily have been, you know, between the error, call it an error, but whatever that clown show was when Hazard went out and Naismith shot it in between his legs. And then, you know, Barrow's attempt early in the game, Hazard gets real credit for that one. I mean, that was not an easy save. That was right in the lower corner of the goal. So it's one of those halves where it could have been 2-2. It could have been 2-1. You know, we didn't have a dominant control of the game. But at least with Brown in there, the midfield was in reasonably good shape in the first half. You know, they weren't carving us open like they did in the second half when they brought in, was his name McGinley or whatever his name
Ginelli,
is. Yeah. Oh, Ginelli, that's right. So he really opened things up with his pace. And they, you know, when they started pressing more aggressively, I mean, it seems like Nielsen really changed his game plan at halftime, or maybe he had a pep talk, whatever it was. I mean,
well, they moved about 10 yards up the pitch and engaged Celtic earlier, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They seem to be sitting quite deep in the first half and kind of looking to absorb and hit on the counter, which, again, given the personnel they were playing, they didn't have a lot of pace in the, It didn't seem to be working. So back to this issue is how much of that was because they made a bad decision versus we were playing well, you know, and then all it took was a relatively organized Hearts level team to start pressing us and move those 10 yards, as Alan said, and then we basically fell apart to a degree. The other positive was that we did have some chance creation. I mean, it wasn't at a level that was great, but the linking up between Taylor and Edouard, I thought, was pretty positive. Edouard didn't finish three opportunities, but he was in good position on all three, and excluding the penalty, and he made great contact on two of them. So again, they were pretty much right at Gordon. But you know, him getting chances inside the 12 yards has not been a frequent occurrence, let alone from crosses. So when I'm trying to pull out some positives, you know, I thought that was an incremental positive that we actually got some chance creation from Edouard inside the box.
Yeah, and I might say the opposite to you. I keep social media open the entire match to my detriment. And what was hilarious to watch was just the sheer just change in attitude and thought from the Celtic fans, because it literally went from this is bloody brilliant to Neil Lennon is a fraud and he started Conor Hazard and Conor Hazard wasn't ready. And then it just continue to spiral from there, and it was a real sense of panic that I wasn't confident going into that penalty shootout that Celtic were going to win that at all. And I mean, if they lost this game, that would have been catastrophic, to be 2-0 up and to lose the game and not win the cup from last year. But again, that's how quickly narratives can change. It changed straight away from that to Connor Hazard, who made a couple of bad mistakes during the game, saved two penalties, and just players who might not have performed to the standard that we expected took penalties and finished them and were clutch and won the trophy when they badly needed to. So that's how quickly football can change. Before we get into, I know Alan has a special little quiz for us. Alan, I do want to get your thoughts on the game and sort of some of the numbers behind what that Celtic performance was at.
So I think I agree with what James is saying. I think on another day, we talked last week, or on the weekend, in the Celtic State of Mind special about Edouard and how his numbers have really, really crashed, actually, quite significantly, both in terms of expected goals and especially expected assists. And some of that is structural in terms of the chances. But here we are in a big game getting three chances. Now, I had a big debate with my son. My son's a striker. He thinks that Edouard, you know, screw it up. He should have finished at least one of them. I think the chances were generally a little bit harder than they looked on a wet surface. The ball was coming across. I know, but then on the other hand, he's central and he's an elite, potentially an elite level striker. So maybe, you know, you're thinking one out of three of those should potentially go in. That changes the game. We shouldn't forget as well the impact of, you know, Hazard getting elbowed into the net for that goal. I mean, that's a massive decision, right? That changes the whole momentum of the game as well. And that's a big miss as well, as is missing the stamp on Brown. So I think, you know, the game did look closer when you look at XG than perhaps it felt at the time when you take the penalty away. But on the other hand, it felt very much at halftime like the Aberdeen semi-final, which I still think is our most complete 90-minute performance of the season, in the sense that it felt like there was control there. The variability in a cup final that can happen had gone Celtic's way, that handball, the bounce that let Christie have the shot. So it felt like things were going in the right direction. You've got the momentum, you've got the confidence, you've got things going your way. You're 2-0 at halftime against what is clearly quite a one-paced and limited team. And I think to then unravel from that situation, I think, is where the absolute sheer frustration comes in for me. Because again, a team like Celtic with the mentality of winning, you should be able to adjust themselves to whatever. Hearts simply pushing themselves forward, pressing a bit higher. You sort of think, okay, well, we'll now look to move the ball perhaps a little bit quicker through midfield. We can break the press. You know, it shouldn't be difficult to work out against a team like that. A way through that. So that's what was really disappointing for me.
If I could, I had a question for Alan. So I didn't rewatch extra time yet, but I rewatched the first 90 minutes or, you know, first 95 minutes, whatever it was, on Sunday night. I'm a masochist that way. partly because I like to try and assess how I felt during the game on my second rewatch, and kind of, you know, was I insane? You know, I hadn't seen the broadcast live, but then I watched in the replay, I saw the interview with Martin O'Neill at halftime. And I was like, you know, again, you got to love the guy. He's a legend. But at that moment, watching that interview, I was like, thank goodness we haven't brought him in to replace Lennon, because he seemed to have watched a different first half than I did too.
Just on that, James, I generally don't, that one of the benefits of watching the game back, and when I capture all the data myself, is that I do see it in a completely different way. I'm not, all the emotion's gone, and I'm just literally watching it. And the reason I very rarely, and I do slip up sometimes and I catch myself on, I don't often, if ever, comment on social media about a game, either in real time or immediately after. I try not to, and I do slip sometimes, because when I watch the game back, I see things that I missed, and actually my perspective on the game is usually shifted, and it's generally quite predictable. We're usually never as bad as I thought we were, or we're usually never as good as I thought we were. You basically adjust towards the average most of my perceptions when I actually watch the game back.
Yeah, watching a game for the second time is vastly different. to watching it the first time.
Yeah. Well, so one of the things I picked up, and that's why I wanted to ask you on Alan. Yeah. So I shared a screenshot in my good, bad, and the ugly thread yesterday that basically showed, you know, we had three people at the back. I mean, it was, we had everyone push forward except Brown, Julian, and Duffy. You know, the triangle of pace in the middle. And so that was horrifying when I saw that. I was like, I didn't remember that watching it live, how exposed we were to any kind of pace encounter. And then the second part was just how completely disorganized our right side was with Christie and even Iyer. I mean, it's amazing, you know, I think Iyer's done a reasonably good job when he's played right back, but you know, he ran around like a guy who didn't know what he was doing in a position that he doesn't play, which is exactly what he is.
Yeah, and neither does Christie, really. Christie's not a right-sided midfielder.
I was trying to figure out what they were doing, and it was all over the place. So I didn't know if you had any sense of that watching it live as well, because I didn't pick that up on my first watch, and in my second watch, I just couldn't believe the amount of times that Christie was over on the left, and Iyer even ran deep central, you know, almost into the penalty area. So again, this is the kind of disorganization that's structural, and you know, as we head looking towards January 2nd, you know, it's frightening to think about how we could be exposed in certain ways to it. Because even Nielsen said after the game that they had I'm paraphrasing in here, but I'm reading between the lines of what he said. It was basically they had some confidence because they had analyzed Celtic. And we've said this, you know, even before we did the show, Alan and I privately, is it's not hard to game plan against Celtic right now because there's so many things to pick up on. So anyway, I didn't know if you picked up on any of that.
I hadn't in real time, but one thing I am going to do is some analysis on substitutions and their effects. And I'm thinking about the methodology to how to do that. It might be like XG up to a point, and then XG after. It would be just a simple thing like that might be quite useful. And to what extent did you change the XG for and against by making changes? Because when I look through my notes that I make as I'm capturing these games, I make some sort of, I capture some sort of just narrative, and it just reminds me about the sort of the things that I felt and noticed when I watched the game, and the substitutions and generally just not just substitutions, but just generally changing up in any way, whether it's shape, formation. It just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen in a timely manner. The opposition always react first. The opposition make changes quite early. You know, even Lille in the game that we won 3-2. You know, he's making a change at halftime. He's making two changes after 60 minutes, right? Because, you know, Lille are still 2-1 down. And you've got players like, I know Turnbull scored the winning goal, but he was dead on his feet. 75 minutes gone. He's out on his feet. So are many of them. No changes. I think there was maybe one change that was enforced. Ayeti came on to replace Klamala, who ran himself into the ground. 78 minutes. They'd already equalised. So it's this lack of responding to the dynamics on the pitch, I think, is the one thing I notice in every single game, pretty much, that we play. And I think I'd love to be able to quantify the impact of it. I think I'm going to have a go at it when I get some time.
Yeah, and I actually tweeted after the game about it. I'm just trying to get up what times the substitutions were made and who was made. But essentially, the point that I made was, at some points, I do feel like we're being harsh on Neil Lennon, and maybe he's not the issue. Maybe it's the player's just not performing. And then I watch him keep a player who is 35 years old and clearly does not have the fitness on the pitch for 106 minutes while he takes three attacking players off for defensive players while you're pushing to win the game. And I have them up here. So he brought Mikey Johnson on 90 minutes, Laxall on 83rd minute, Sorrow on 106 minutes for Brown, Rogic on at 68th minute, Frimpong on at 83 minutes, Griffiths on 97 minutes. So essentially the three substitutions that I was talking about was the Rogic on for Turnbull, Frimpong on for El Yunusi, and Taylor on for Laxalt, or Laxalt on for Taylor rather. So the three substitutions, on first look, Turnbull on, Rogic on for Turnbull, that's a like-for-like substitution. But
In a midfield that's just starting to get overrun.
Exactly. Yeah. You bring on
Rodric isn't the
answer. Bring on your number 10
mystifying. Yeah. Mystifying.
And then two right wing backs who we've spoken about do not have the same level of execution when you get up into the box as the players that they replace. So, and then you're leaving your slowest, oldest, least fit midfielder on the pitch for extra time. It was mystifying for me.
I thought for sure when I saw the second round of subs that we were switching to 3-5-2. Because I just, looking at the pieces on the field, I would never have dreamed he would have put Christie out left.
Yes.
To put Frimpong at right wing. I mean, I just, so many square peg round holes. And then Iyer right back. And I've joked since the beginning of the season, I mean, it's like the island of misfit toys. I mean, it's just so many, you know, things that just don't make sense throwing together. And watching it live, it was just like everyone that got announced kept ramping up the level of what are they trying to do here? Yeah.
I think the logic behind it was, well, in my mind, the logic behind it would have been Frimpong, Laxalt, Mikey Johnson, all of them have pace, all of them are quick and run about, but then that takes away the logic from keeping Brown on the pitch. So I genuinely just don't know what he was doing. Mikey Johnson, I do want to give him credit though. I thought he was excellent when he came on. I don't know if that's reflected in his output.
It was such a short period of time. To be honest with you, I didn't look at him that closely because he had such a limited amount of time on the on the pitch. I mean, I think probably the most notable thing from his appearance was that he stepped up to take a penalty. I mean, I think, you know, excuse my crudeness, but that takes some balls after having been out for that long, had to come back and have barely played and then to get into that pressure cooker and, step up. I mean, one would think that they had a predetermined prioritization of who would take penalties, but then I don't know. I've heard some things that there was some spontaneity as far as Iyer stepping up and volunteering for the fifth penalty. So maybe that's more storytelling and PR than.
I think you can plan for that to a degree, but then you got to see who's on the pitch at the end.
Well, right.
Who's not cramping up? Who's feeling, right. Who's feeling it, who's not feeling it, that kind of thing. I'd personally not be too critical. I actually felt, we've got a decent set of penalty takers here. I think we're okay. But the fact that Christie missed was a bit annoying, obviously. But I think going back to the point, and about the substitutions is, in theory, with the way the game was going from the sort of early in the second half, if you've got, I know, you know, Laxalt and Frimpong are limited in their creativity, but if you're playing a team that's suddenly pressing you higher and you're going to perhaps go to more of a counter-attacking strategy, those two are pretty good at getting the ball forward quite quickly and running into space and finding space, actually. And that would have made sense if that had been the strategy. As James says, it seemed to make sense in one level, but the pieces weren't actually put in the right place. And I would have, moving to that back three and then pushing Iyer in one would have made sense to have those two players on the pitch and then to play that more counter-attacking, just shore up the middle a little bit. But that's not what happened.
Yeah. I didn't really know what to say about it at the time, and I still don't really know what the point of that was. Anyway, Celtic won the game and won the trophy, won the quadruple treble. It's never been done. As I said, I am excited about that. I do think it's an unbelievable achievement. No matter what you think of the Scottish League, and I know a lot of people watching this or listening to this are Scottish football fans, but if you don't support Scottish football or people that think that the dominance is easy, look across other places in Europe where the leagues are dominated by one or two teams. This has never been done. So it takes an unbelievable level of consistency to do this, regardless of your quality or benefits or budget. It takes unbelievable character and consistency across a high level of sport to do this. So I do want to say congrats to Celtic for doing it, and it's brilliant going into Christmas with this kind of feeling. And it could be, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but it could be actually the turning point for these players where they think, holy shit, we're letting this league go now. We need to get a bit of fire under our arses. But quadruple treble. Alan, you've done a little bit of a quiz for us.
Yeah, so listen, I'm not going to go to respond to your comments and dampen any enthusiasm. It's Christmas, you know.
Can I interrupt just for a second? We're recording show how the sausage is made. We're recording at 7 a.m. my time. So that's why I have bedhead and my eye. I have some rings under my eyes.
I'm just old.
had a couple of glasses of red wine last night. So I didn't get to read the full article, but I did see, you know, it's funny how the universe has symmetry at times. And I saw something before we came on this morning about how I think the Lincoln Red Imps are contesting the fact that this has never been done before. So maybe they've done something in Gibraltar. But I find it the symmetry of that it happens to be them relative that this really all started with a loss in Gibraltar.
Yeah.
Which is just weird.
So listen, that's a great fact, right? So hold that thought, yeah. Because, you know, we end the talk there about what it takes to win a quadruple treble. So let's see if you guys really do know your facts when it comes to what it has taken to actually deliver this. So there's going to be 10 questions, but there's some bonus questions as well. I'm going to ask you to go first alternately. So no unfairness over the whole 10 questions. So the first question, okay. Celtic have scored 452 goals in 180 matches. So what I want to know is how many shots have Celtic had on target in those games? And James, I want you to go first. And just while you're both thinking about that, it's going to be 10 points if you get within 100, okay? And I'll give you 5 points if you get within 200. So, James, can I take your answer? How many shots on target have Celtic had in those 180 matches?
180 matches. So I'm going to say...
932. Ender, what are you going for?
So 180 matches, is it?
Yep.
Okay, just give me a second because I'm terrible at math, so I'm doing this in my head. I'm going to say 858.
Okay. So listen, you're both not close enough to get any points. It's 1,306. 1,306 shots on target.
That's quite high. So that'd be averaging more than 6 shots a game, would it?
Well, that's way more.
Yeah, exactly. I could tell you how many, but I can't. I can only do so many things at once. All right, so 0-0. It's a bit of a defensive start to the game.
This could be a 0-0 come the end.
This could go to penalties. Second question. What has been Celtic's average possession percentage across all 180 matches? So all those 180 domestic matches, remember, this isn't Europe. Average possession percentage. Ender, you're going to go first. I'm going to give you 10 points for getting the percentage number precisely correct. Okay. And if you're within 3% either way, I'm going to give you 5 points. So Ender, what's your take?
Without giving too much of a clue to James, I'm guessing it's much higher because of the invincible season under Brendan Rodgers. So I'm going to go for 67.
Okay, thank you. And James, what's your?
I'm going to say 64.5.
I'm taking 64. I'm not having.
Oh, well, then make it 65. I make it 65.
Okay. So listen, you are both within 3, right? Because the answer is 68.
Oh,
Ender was within 1, so I'm going to give Ender a cheeky 1 point extra for being slightly closer.
He deserves it.
Listen, there is a bonus point, okay? A bonus point for 5 points is, in those 180 matches, how many of those matches did Celtic have less than 50% possession? So how many matches out of 180 did Celtic have less than 50% possession? And I'll give 5 points for a right answer. Ender, you go first.
Well, less than 50.
Less than 50% possession. How many out of the 180 domestic matches, remember?
25.
Oh, you're way too high, Ender. That's a terrible answer.
He's naismithing you there, Ender. Yes, he's naismithing you. He's just stamped on you.
That was a scissor. That was a full scissor. Yeah. I'm going to say this is all domestic, right? So this includes, I'm thinking the only, maybe I know at Ibrox last season, and then I'm going to say the cup final. I'm going to say two.
Okay. The actual answer is seven. So you weren't, neither of you were really close enough to get, I would have given you a bonus point maybe if you got a little bit closer than that. But yeah, seven games, seven matches. Okay, question three is how many red cards have been issued to Celtic players in those 180 matches? James, you're going to go first. You'll get 10 points for a right answer. And I'll give you 5 points if you get within one, which might give you a clue as to...
just total reds, not straight reds. So it could be
just red number of red cards issued in those 180 games.
It's not much. I'm going to say... five.
Okay, and Ender, what's your answer?
Yeah, I can barely remember a couple, so I'm going to go with six.
Okay, the right answer is actually 10.
This 10, is brutal.
So 0 points there, but here's a chance for you to pick up some points. So, again, alternately, I want you to give me the name of a player that is one of those 10 sendings off. So, starting with James.
Frimpong.
Okay, that's
from the cup final.
Yeah. That's 1 point to you.
So I'm not allowed to choose him. Kieran Tierney.
No.
Do I get a second chance to keep bringing up points?
You get five each.
Yeah.
Oh, do we? Okay.
Yeah. So Simonovic against Rangers. I remember that one.
That's another point.
That was going to be my last guess.
Yeah, suck on that, Ender.
The elbows are flying now.
So there's 10.
I'm behind. I got to try and get him off the game here.
Scott Brown has surely got sent off in that period.
Okay, I'll give you a point for that.
Okay.
Third go, James.
Yep. So I'll say, oh my goodness. Good Lord, Lustig?
Well done. Yes, yeah. Lustig. Lustig, yeah. Against, I think it was Aberdeen. Yeah. Ender.
Svinchenko?
No, not right. Fourth go, James.
I'm going to go with...
three out of three so far. Amazing.
Yeah. Let's see... trying to remember the has Iyer gotten a red card? I'm going to say Iyer, which is because I'm
well done. Out. Yeah,
that
well
is Iyer.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
a guess. Four, that one I didn't remember. So that all right.
Fourth go and come on,
still Callum Mack.
Callum McGregor away at St Mirren, I think it was, or Hamilton. Sorry, Hamilton away.
Oh, I have one more. I get one more, right?
Yeah, one more.
I just remembered one. This was, I think, the low point as far as red cards was in Cham at St. Mirren when he decided he didn't want to play that day.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. So Enda, you've got one go left. Now, what I will say is that one of the players mentioned, cheating a little bit, one of the players mentioned has been sent off twice in 10 games. So it's actually only nine names. So you can reuse one of those names, or you can try and guess one of the other names that haven't been mentioned so far. Oh. An extra point.
Who would it be? So is there another name that hasn't been mentioned yet?
So I think there's, let me see, there are two names that haven't been mentioned, and there's one that has been sent off twice that you can use again.
I'm just going to be ballsy and just go for it. I'll do a Neil Lennon. Instead of going for the sensible option, I'll go for Lee Griffiths.
No, not right. So the ones that you missed, guys, were Boyata got sent off in one game.
That's an obvious one, yeah.
And Christie got sent off in a game as well.
That was just Yeah, that was against Livingston last season.
That's
yeah,
right, I forgot the Livingston that one. Game. Yeah. And then, of course, the person who's been sent off twice is, of course, Scott Brown. So 5-2. So you're back in the lead, James. That was a good
I needed
round.
That one. I needed it.
Right. So what does that make the overall score?
So the score at the moment is James has got 10 points and Ender's got 8. So it's a tight one. So the next question 4, Ender, you're going to go first. The number of goals Celtic have scored within the first 10 minutes of games. So 452 goals in total, 180 matches. How many have been within the first 10 minutes of games? Now, I'm going to give you 10 points if you get one either side.
Okay.
And I'm going to give you 5 points, depending on how I feel. Let's do it. Gets closer.
So, 450 goals, did you say?
152 goals.
52 goals.
Yeah. How many in the first 10 minutes of games?
Okay, it's not going to be overly high, but I'll go with 115.
115, okay.
I'm going to say that was I'm rubbing it in now, Ender. That was another bad answer.
That was a duffy long diagonal, that one, Ender. It's gone way off the park.
So I'm going to say 31.
Okay, the actual answer is 27, so I'm going to give James 5 points for that.
That's fair enough.
Pretty decent.
I was being a little bit optimistic with that one.
Yeah, 27 goals. Not many goals scored in the first 10 minutes of game. So question 5 is, how many goals have Celtic scored within the last 10 minutes of game? So this doesn't include extra time. It's just the last 10 minutes of games. Again, 452 goals, 180 matches. How many goals in the last 10 minutes of games? And again, If you get sort of within, I would say, if you get within 5, I'll give you the 10 points. And then whoever gets closest, I'll give 5 points.
I go first on this one, right?
James, you're first on this one. Yep.
So I'm going to say 83.
Okay. And Ender, what's your...
I went way over last time, so I'll be conservative this time and go... 69.
So the actual answer is 77.
Oh.
So James just gets the 5 points again. So open up a bit of a lead here now. Okay, question 6.
Age over beauty, Ender. Age over beauty.
This is all payback for these ageist jokes from the last pod.
I should say that despite my age, I do have the memory of a goldfish. So I sometimes I even think, was Nakamura part of this quadruple treble?
It's just
squash into one. So
listen, Ender, you're up first and you need to start making this count. Okay, so how many games have gone to extra time? 36 cup ties. How many games have gone to extra time? You've got to get this spot on.
Just the cup ties, yeah.
Just the cup ties, yeah. League games don't tend to go to extra time.
Yeah.
even the SPFL don't have rules as quite as flexible as that.
Definitely 2 finals. How many games?
How many games?
36. Yeah,
you 36 altogether.
36 okay. games. How many have gone to extra time?
6.
No pressure, Ender, but I know this.
Oh, there we go. See, you did your prep before the cup final. I'll go 6, so I don't know.
Yeah, James. I think I know it. I think it's 2. I think it's just the 2.
It is 2, indeed. It is
just
2.
The 2 finals.
Yep.
So
before you say anything, bonus 5 points. Who can shout out first? Who was the other extra time against?
Motherwell.
Nope.
No, it was the game after Cluj last year. I'm trying to remember if it was a Dunfermline. Dunfermline. Yeah,
that's right. That's the right answer. Oh, it's a hammering now. It's a hammering.
I feel like I started with a couple of league games like Celtic, and then I entered Europe.
35-8. Yeah, that was your Cluj moment there.
I'm going to warn you, and my wife yells at me and has been yelling at me for years since my children were toddlers that I don't let them win anything. So I will not take mercy on you. I'm going to rub this in as much as I can.
This is what we need. Okay. So James, you're up first on this next question. Who scored the very first goal in the quadruple treble run?
Very first goal. Well, we didn't score. I think we got skunked at Gibraltar.
This is domestic games only.
Oh, I'm sorry. Right.
Quadruple treble.
Quadruple
treble. Very first goal.
Okay. So the first game would have been, I believe, the Hearts game where Sinclair came on and scored. So I'm going to say Griffiths.
Okay. And Ender?
I'm trying to remember who all was in that team. That wasn't Lee Griffiths. I'll go with James Forrest.
Oh, what a comeback. It's on. The comeback is on. He's done it. In off the post. Oh. James Forrest.
Was that the one that he cut into the box and hit it with his left foot?
So listen, if you can remember that goal, then for an extra 5 points, tell me in what minute was it scored? And I'll give it, if you get it within 5 minutes, I'll give you it. So what minute of the game was the first goal of the quadruple treble scored? And James, so you up first.
I'll say 14th minute.
Okay, and Ender?
I'll go 21st.
Oh, it was the 8th minute.
Okay. Quick.
James replies on the counter-attack there with 5 points. Okay, we're getting to the sharp end now. So question 8. You like this one. Amanda, you're up first. How many matches have Celtic played on artificial surfaces? 180 matches. How many on artificial surfaces?
Jesus, too many.
I'll give you 10 points for a precise answer. If you get within, let's say, 3, I'll give you 5 points.
See, I don't want to do my math out loud, but I tend to do that. So it's definitely a minimum of 4 anyway, per season, for 4 seasons. So it's over 16.
Remember, we don't play every team 4 times.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking of who all has an artificial pitch in the cups as well. So,
yeah,
I think it's mid 20s, so I'll go like 20, late 20s, 28.
Okay, and James,
I'm going to go with 40.
The actual answer is 17.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So I was closer with the first.
I'll give you 5 points for being closer, just to keep it interesting.
All right. I doubled my number stupidly.
Okay.
That's embarrassing.
5 extra points, and you got to get this number right. Of those 17 matches, how many have Celtic lost? 17 matches on artificial domestically. How many have Celtic lost in that quadruple treble run?
Do I go first?
Yes.
Yeah.
2.
And James?
I think you're right, Enda. But I'll go 3.
Oh, the answer is 3. In off the goalkeeper's backside, that one. So
the only two I can remember, one was against Clark's Kilmarnock, and then the 2-0 Livingston. Do you have the third, Alan?
There's another one at Kilmarnock. There was a 1-0, there was a 2-1 with a last-minute Finlay goal, okay. And then there was a 2-0 at... 3 out of 17. Probably not as many as people maybe think.
Right.
Okay, so we're getting into... Let me just check on the scores here. I still think it's probably a little bit one-sided. So we're 45 for James... and we are 23 for Brenda, but you could just about sneak it with bonus points here, Enda. So James is going to go first on this one, and it's our old friend expected goals. So James is in his comfort zone here. Mm-hmm. So 182 matches, 452 goals. What is Celtic's expected goals? They've scored 452, but what would the expected goals model say they should have scored over that period?
So, I'm going to say it's 182 games. What was we scored 452?
Yep.
I'm going to say expected goals should have had us at about 426.
Okay, and Ender, what do you think? With your vast knowledge of expected goals, what's it telling you?
So can you repeat the question?
So we've scored 452 goals in 182 matches, but if you look at the expected goals model, what does the expected goals model say we should have expected to score really in those matches?
Yeah, it's got to be close enough to the real thing. So I'll go
Price is Right. Get game show strategy. Price is Right.
What did you go for?
426.
426. I'll go 424.
Well, listen, they're both very good guesses. The right answer is 432. So 452, we overperformed our expected goals by 20 over the period. So I think James gets the 5 points there. But there is the last question to go, so a bit of pride to play for here, Ender.
Here we go.
hopefully you'll smile when you go and collect up your loser's medal, not that sort of Naismith scowl. So the last one is predictably, what is Celtic's expected goals against over the same period? So Celtic have conceded 106 goals in those 182 games. But again, what does expected goals say Celtic would have been expected to concede in those games? And Ender, you get the first go at this one.
So how many have they conceded again?
They conceded 106 in 182 matches.
106. Okay, so I will go 104.
That's a good guess. That's a good guess.
And James?
I'll say 105. No mercy.
That is just brutal, right? Because the right answer is the right answer is 137. So you are actually closer.
137.
137.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised by that. Yeah. Okay.
So Celtic have actually conceded 31 less goals and scored 20 more goals. So this is what happens. You know, this is why you win quadruple trebles, because at both ends of the pitch, the expected goal model has been outperformed, and that's one of the reasons. So right. There you go. And okay, just a little bonus. In those 182 matches, how many times did the opposition register zero expected goals in a game? So absolutely, literally no shots on target.
No shots on target.
How many out of 182? And Ender, you get first go at that one. This one.
Ten.
Okay, and James.
Yeah, I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go a little higher. I'm gonna say 18.
It's actually only three matches.
Only three. Wow.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's not that. It's a pretty unusual thing to do. So I'm going to give Ender 5 points there. But really, it's a late consolation. Nice shot from outside the box, but it's merely consolation.
Yeah.
55 points for James, and 28 points for Ender. So
listen, I'll take that. I thought I was going to do worse than that. So.
It just goes to show, right, that, you know, stats knowledge does beat, you know, intuition every single time. It just has to be said.
I'd like to say that I'm more of a Christie. I just like to take, you know, risky shots, and Tom Rodgick likes to just play the risky pass every time. So I'm the person that the fans get excited about, as opposed to we'll
get the job, you know? It that works in your head. That's fine.
Anyway, guys, it's been brilliant, really, over the last couple of weeks, getting to know some of the XG of Celtic and some of the performance. And unfortunately for the people listening, we haven't had that many games to be excited about or happy about or even positive about in any way. So the fact that we won a quadruple treble, even though the performance wasn't good, I'm just going to say I'm going into Christmas happy, and hopefully you are too, and hopefully everyone who listened to the Huddle Breakdown in its infancy are happy as well going into this Christmas and stay safe, because it has been a pretty shitty year, let's be honest. So a happy Christmas to you, James, and to Alan as well.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, guys.
Yeah, all the best. Everyone has a great holiday. Hope everyone gets a good rest and time with their families. And thanks for listening and watching.
And to everyone as well who listened to the Huddle Breakdown over the last couple of weeks, I hope you have a good Christmas. And we will be back again after Christmas, probably maybe do something in the new year before or after the Old Firm game when it comes around. Hopefully Jesus, please God, we don't get absolutely destroyed in that game. I don't think I can start 2021 the same way as I started 2020. So hopefully we'll be back anyway. Loads of exciting stuff to come your way and to be announced in the new year about the Huddle Breakdown as well. So thanks for listening to the podcast this year, and we'll be back again next year. We'll chat to you later.
Was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.